Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today on Medical Monday to answer your questions on issues of mental health and the end of life care is Dr. N. Michael Murphy, founder of the Love, Loss, and Forgiveness Project, a graduate of University College in Dublin, Ireland. He completed his medical residency in psychiatry at Boston State Hospital. After previously serving for a decade as the deputy director of the Capital District Psychiatric Center in Albany, Dr. Murphy co-founded and served as medical director of St. Peter's Hospice, also in Albany. In 1995, he founded the Love, Loss, and Forgiveness Project, the mission of which is to acknowledge love loss and forgiveness and create educational opportunities essential to living a more loving life. Dr. Murphy, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Thank you very much.
I'm so glad you're here with us. There are a lot of people who suffer grief and who don't know, exactly what to do when this happens. We all think about it from time to time, but then when it actually happens, it's really quite something extraordinary, isn't it?
And we don't like to put it into words. We don't like to upset mother or dad or whoever's dying. And often, if we're left alone, we don't say what we want to say.
So how is this medical?
Well, how is anything medical? This is not medical. It's like birth. It's not medical. It's just a natural part of life.
Yes.
And we die as we live. If we lived a pretty hectic kind of a life, we'll die a pretty hectic kind of a death. The thing that we can do is help, and this is what I really enjoyed doing for 17 years, was helping put people into words what they really wanted to say. I mean,
what do you mean? I'm sorry.
What they really wanted to say to the person who's dying.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, if Dad was an alcoholic and Dad was a very difficult dad and perhaps violent and so on, people sort of think, what on earth can I say?
Yeah, yeah.
And what they could say is something like, you know, it wasn't easy, Dad, growing up with you.
Fascinating.
And, you know, your drinking put a barrier between us, and I never really got to know you, and you never got to know me.
So when the guy's on the way out,
yeah,
you give him a kick?
Well, no, it's not a kick. It's really reaching in. It's reaching in and saying, eventually, thank you for being my dad, because if you weren't my dad, I wouldn't be here.
Right, but on the other hand, you're also saying you shouldn't have been a drunk.
No, I'm not saying that. That's a useless thing to say.
Yeah, right.
Why was he a drunk and all the rest of it? Questions you might think you want to ask.
Right.
But those are not questions that are relevant at this time. What's relevant is that we did miss out on one another. You missed out on me. I missed out on you. And that was a bit sad.
But yes.
Anyway, here we are.
I hear you.
And I want to say thank you for being my dad.
Ah.
So we can do that.
1-800-348-2551. Love to hear about your experiences, how you've handled all of this. 1-800-348-2551. You can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below on today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. And you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. And here we go. So look, the phones are, this is a very sensitive subject, but on the other hand, this is what Vox Pop is known for, going where others don't go. And Michael, do you have anything to add to this?
Oh, I do. I have a lot to add. Because, you know, when I first went into the hospice, I read a book by Ernest Becker. It was called Denial of Death. And Becker said, there are only two things that human beings fear. They have the fear of death, and they have the fear of life. And I think that's true. I think we may say, "Oh, death doesn't bother me," but we're scared.
We are indeed.
And
Freud said much the same thing about death.
Well, and Freud was scared of life. We are scared of life. And the part of life I think we're most scared about is love, that we're scared of loving. And if life has any meaning, it doesn't have the meaning of getting to the top of the heap and making a lot of money and all the rest of it. It has how much love have I given to myself and to others in my life.
So here you are. You started the St. Peter's operation, the hospice operation, and the rest of it. What are you trying to accomplish? I mean, literally, what are you trying to accomplish?
Well, I'm trying to help people, having sort of been around death for 17 years. I wanted to get into the business of looking at life, and now I do workshops that help people to look at love in their life. Now, it's really quite amazing. I showed you earlier a picture of a child, of a mother gazing at her 5-month-old child, and another picture of the father gazing at the same child. And I saw this picture 10 or 15 years ago, and I said, my God, that is the picture of unconditional love. That is what the meaning of unconditional love. The mother just gazes softly at the child, and the child gazes back. And you can feel the love going back and forth between mother and child. And what's proved now by neurophysiologist, if the child doesn't have that kind of love in the first 2 years, they're not going to be able to develop relationships. Some of their neurophysiological wiring is not going to connect.
Interesting. Okay, we're going to take a phone call. Let's go to John in Shutesbury, Massachusetts, 1-800-348-2551. John, go.
Hi, Ellen.
Hey.
I'm 53. And I lost my brother in an accident when I was 13.
I'm sorry.
And 2 weeks later, my father, my biological father, died of a stroke. And when I was about, I can't do the math right now, but in 1995, my stepfather was terminally ill. And the lessons that I had learned, although I'm sure I messed up the grieving process quite a bit on my brother and my biological father. One important thing I felt for an individual who is terminally ill is to affirm to them that they were an important part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. And I, even though he was sick, I got him in the car, and it was something simple like taking him for a ride, for a hot dog, which he wasn't supposed to eat, but, it's quality of life, and he wanted it. And we sat there, and we talked in that car for 20 minutes, and I said things in 20 minutes that I thought he needed to know, and that whether there were things that in my life that were maybe he did right or wrong, I thought it was important that he feel like he could be more at peace.
Okay, now, John, we've got that part of it. Let's go to the doctor and find out what it is that you did that he wants, Dr. Murphy, that he wants to tell us about.
Well, that sounds wonderful that you had those conversations with your dad before he died. And the unfortunate thing is that many people don't have such conversations. And what I do in the Love, Loss, and Forgiveness Project now is to have little exercises where you can imagine you're talking to your dad, and you've got 10 minutes to say whatever it was that you failed to say to him
when you had the chance.
And right. it's an amazingly healing thing. I personally, I ran away from my mother, who was alcoholic, in England, and I came over here mostly to get away from her. And of course, I didn't get away from her. I brought her with me, and she died before I was.
You mean you brought her essence with you?
I brought her essence.
You didn't bring her physically.
I didn't bring her physically.
Okay. Yeah.
But later, after she died, I did have the opportunity of just having somebody like you in front of me and speaking to you as if you were my mother. And I was able to say to her, it wasn't easy being your child, and I was depressed.
You speak it out loud?
Oh, yes, to you. to you. I speak it out loud. That's terribly important. And you know, in these workshops, if I'm speaking to you, you know, afterwards the person would often say, "Oh my gosh, you know, when you were speaking to me, I felt like your mother." Mm-hmm. And so it's important, like this man was saying, it's very important we have a chance to speak and to say things, not wagging the finger and saying what a lousy dad you were, just saying if this was the case, things were wonderful or things were not always wonderful.
Okay, now, John, could you give us a little bit more reaction from what happened when you did do that?
I will tell you that it seemed like he was relieved. I know I was relieved. I was at his bedside when he passed.
Yes.
And I would like to think that being there, having the conversation, you know, giving him permission to go, that all played a part in, you know, however he transitioned.
Okay, John, so, I'm so sorry to cut you off. I want you to know that there are five people behind you. You started us off, and we really appreciate that. It always takes one courageous person to get it going. Thanks, John.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to take a brief break, and we will be right back. So just stay in there, Vinny and Susan and everybody else who's on the line.
Support for WAMC comes from St. Francis Hospital and Health Centers Poughkeepsie, serving the healthcare needs of the community, including trauma and emergency care, and the Center for Robotic Surgery, sfhospital.org. St. George's School, Clifton Park, New York, hosting its open house on Saturday, February 9th from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. for their all-day pre-K and after-school enrichment program, stgeorgeschoolcp.org. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts, ashokancenter.org. And Edward Jones, Uptown Kingston, Risa Conde, Edward Jones Financial Advisor, Making Sense of Investing, 845-331-6293.
Wow, the phones are really ringing now, and let's go to Vinny in Glens Falls. Vinny, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, very well.
Okay, good. I am a new therapist in training up in the Glens Falls area, and I have a client who came in, and initially he came in because he said that he felt like he didn't really grieve the passing of his sister, an untimely death that happened around 3 years ago. Since then, I've met with him about 6 or 7 times, and he hasn't brought her up. He's mentioned other, like, relationship problems with females, but he hasn't brought her up, and I haven't really pressed him on that because that's not what he comes in to talk about. But I just wonder about the concept of complicated bereavement and how that presents in patients.
Well, let's ask Dr. Murphy. Doctor?
Well, I can give you an example of somebody who came to a workshop of mine 2 or 3 years ago. And this woman came, her daughter having been murdered 2 years before, and she'd been in treatment, she'd been in individual therapy, group therapy, she was on antidepressants, and she just wouldn't look at me or anybody else, her head was down. And what I did pretty quickly was, this sounds a bit strange maybe, but what I did pretty quickly was asked her to look in a mirror. I had a small mirror, and I put it in front of her, and I said, look in this mirror and tell me what you see. And she wouldn't do that. And I repeated it 2 or 3 times. And then she wouldn't look, and so I just got behind her and pointed into the mirror. I said, listen, that one in the mirror is dying. And if you don't gaze at her like the mother gazes at her child, if you don't gaze at her and take her in your arms, she'll die. And she just woke up. And she did gaze at this woman, and she saw how incredibly depressed looking she was. Mm. And it it changed her life.
And now, Vinny, how do you feel about that, what you're hearing?
Well, it seems like it's a slightly different circumstance.
Yes.
And the person who I see, he doesn't take any kind of medication. He doesn't really appear to be, like, deeply depressed or whatever. He has relationship problems, but the relationship problems haven't been, they're not new. They came way before his sister's passing. So I don't know if I...
No, but I get the gist of your question, which is that the client is suffering because of the misery of the loss, but is putting it into different forms other than dealing with what he needs or she needs to be dealing with. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it could be, potentially. And that's my question, and that's part of it. Part of the other part to the question is,
sure,
should I kind of now go there with him, and should I, you know, kind of press the issue, so to speak, of that, now that we've developed a rapport and he hasn't brought it up? You know, I don't want to let it go by the wayside if it's something that I should deliberately bring back.
Okay, let's go back to Dr. Murphy. Doctor.
Well, I suppose I sense that with this man and with most people, they don't really like themselves much. And I go back to the mirror, and I know it sounds like a bit of a distraction, but they don't like the person in the mirror. And you know what I've said to people, what do you think the person in the mirror thinks about what you've just said? Because that person in the mirror needs you and needs your love if he's going to survive and live a loving life. And so I think that the death of somebody else often triggers this self-dislike. And I personally, I focus on the dislike of self. And then later, after that, then I can start to talk about, now tell me about your sister. Because the basic problem with many of us, my gosh, I've seen a lot of people in workshops, and I have to say that the average person doesn't like himself or herself very much, doesn't spend any time with himself or herself, doesn't give the loving gaze to himself or herself. And if he did, I say this about to parents, I say the greatest gift you can give your children is that you know how to love yourself, and you love yourself and each other. Then the children are off the hook.
Interesting.
So I'm saying, I personally look at the relationship you have with yourself first off, and then move into other things when he gets it that he needs basically to love himself.
Hey, Vinny, I'd love to carry this on, but there's a lot of yellow up there from the notes that everybody's coming on, and I thank you for your participation.
Thank you.
So thanks, Vinny. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's go to Susan in Albany. Susan, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Hello, Dr. Murphy. I know you don't remember me, but I will never forget you. It was 21 years ago, next month, that we met as my mother became a hospice patient, and I want to extol the virtues of the concept of hospice, and I think the word love has been used quite a bit. I don't think it can be overused because it defines what hospice does. I will be celebrating my 20th anniversary in April of being a hospice volunteer.
That's wonderful.
And I just can't
That's wonderful.
Tell you how glad I am that you started that hospice when you did.
Yeah. Did you like to react to that?
Oh, well, thank you. And the hospice taught me about love. You know, I didn't know much about love before I went into the hospice. My family can tell you that. I didn't know how to love myself. I didn't know how to love them. And what I learned in the hospice, witnessing people like yourself in action, expressing love, I learned about love, and it changed my life. I sort of felt, in a way, I was kind of reborn, and things get better in my life. I've got better since I was in the hospice.
Well, how did that work, Michael? How did you learn about love being in a hospice?
Well, you know, when we've only got a very short time with Dad or with Mother or somebody who's dying, we need to say everything then.
Yeah.
And I was able to help people put things into words. And in putting things into words...
Did
I? Thank you, Susan.
Yes, you
And in doing that for them, I was doing it for myself also. I was putting things into words with my mother, for instance, and my inarticulate father. So I was able to start to become more loving by focusing on my own family.
Interesting. And have either of you ever seen a situation in which you didn't much like somebody?
Yeah.
And then you get into the departing stage,
yes,
this hospice stage, and people turn around. I mean, they get better about it.
Oh, but you know, a very quick story. There was a man, an elderly man, and he was dying. He came into the hospice, and I asked him, did he have any brothers or sisters? And he said, yes, two brothers. One was in Florida and one was in Washington, D.C. He hadn't seen one for 10 years. He hadn't seen another for 20 years. I said, does they know you're sick? No. So I got him to call them.
You got him, the patient.
Him, yeah. Mm-hmm. I got him to call them. They came up that
really?
Day.
Really?
That day they came up. They hadn't seen each other at all. And the big to-do was about money. Money when mother died and money when father died.
Yeah, not unfamiliar.
That's a very familiar story. And they sort of saw it. Hey, you know, that was a lot of crap. It's what's important is to say what they said.
And it was healing.
And it was healing.
For them and for the guy.
And so it took no time at all if you get the trivia out of the way.
Well, Susan, that was a wonderful call. Thank you so much for making it.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Okay, and let's go to Barbara in Rosendale. The telephone number is 1-800-348-2551. There are two free phones open, actually three now. So now's a great time to get in. Okay. Go ahead, Barbara. You're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Doctor. Listen, I just want to say this is the greatest program. And I heard you say in the beginning that it's a sensitive topic, which it is, of course. But I just think we need to talk about it more. And I'm so glad you're doing this conversation. Why is it in our culture that the second most important thing that happens to you in your entire life, you're not supposed to talk about it? I experienced the death of my mother about a year and a half ago, and she was 96. And I know a lot of people in our area probably have aging parents and who don't want to talk about this and who don't want to think about it, don't want to face it. And it's just so important. So I just really want to thank you. And also, I mean, in my case, she was 96. She was really ready to go, and she never was really ill. And it wasn't something about something we couldn't talk about, or we had a close relationship, but it was a source of great joy. And she wasn't afraid to go. Well, she had a different kind of sort of spiritual philosophy anyway, where she always felt that we have many lives. But that aside, I was able to talk to the people in the hospital in such a way and say, well, you know, she's not afraid. And we would talk about it, and then they would talk about their parents to me because they couldn't talk about it to anybody.
Barbara, did you bring up anything with her, you know, that was unresolved?
No, I don't think so, because we had resolved it all. We were all just kind of waiting. She had lived with me and my husband for a year and a half, and then she had a fall, and she had to go into the nursing hospital in Kingston, you know, so forth and so on. And we sat with her. She had no medication. All she had was a glass of wine every day, which was prescribed by the doctor. So we had to bring her the wine, you know, to the nursing home. And we sat with her, and I don't think nothing was really unresolved, no. So in my case, it was easy. And she had a beautiful death, and I wasn't there, but I felt it. And it's just so important to talk about this.
Yeah. Barbara, thanks for the great call. Michael, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is under-discussed, and it's worth discussing. And you obviously did, and it can be a very good saying goodbye, saying thank you and wishing her well. I think that's very much under discussed. And I also honestly think that living and loving is under discussed. We think we know everything about love. But you know what? When people talk about love, they're really often mostly thinking about sex. And if we love a child, oh my God, that means we have some sexual interest in the child. And of course, that is very much in the news. But now we're pushing people away from children. We're protecting the children, and they're not getting as much sort of relational attention as they need. It's the same with teachers. Teachers are not allowed to touch the children. This is a very
well. I'm a little confused here. I mean, I have two children. Yeah. They're adult children. I love them both very, very much.
Yeah.
I don't confuse my love for them with a sexual fear that this is sexual as opposed to
right.
emotional.
Right. So you don't. But, you know, many people do. Many people think that if you love if the teachers love their children,
yeah.
that's a bad thing.
No, I hear you.
And if doctors, I mean, doctors, the word love is not in the lexicon for the men. But if we don't love our patients, then the healing, we can fix them, but the healing is not done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right at this time, the real tragedy of the present time is not talking about death. It's not talking about life. And it's not talking about, for instance, in this business and in this terrible business in Connecticut. We're focusing on guns, rightly so, and we're also focusing on mental illness. And that's important too. But what kind of a community and what kind of a country have we created which is full of fear? 2 million people after the Connecticut thing bought extra guns. This is a terribly tense.
And yet, didn't you get the feeling that that community came together and healed together and loved each other?
Oh, for a very short time, yes. Just mm-hmm. as in death, we can come together and we can have this wonderful experience with mother or somebody else. Absolutely. But what about the rest of our life? And what about the sort of the quality of life right now? You know, people talk about, to me, they talk about their workplace. It's a hellhole. The love, all those kind of things, they're not in it. It's just the bottom line that's
okay,
in it.
Okay. That's great. Barbara, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the program. We love it.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just tell everybody that the telephone number is 1-800-348-2551. There are three free phones. This is a great time to get in. Let's go to Mary Kate in Troy. Mary Kate, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Doctor. A comment and a question. First of all, when my mother passed away, she had been in hospice. They did a beautiful job. They gave us this book, too, written by a nurse about the actual dying process, how the body actually does shut down and die. That was a big help. But I realized there was something I wanted to say to her, and she was a bit stubborn, not wanting to acknowledge that she was dying, even though she knew she was. So I wrote her a poem, and I read it to her. She was on her deathbed and in and out of consciousness, but I read it anyway and thanked her and kind of told her her favorite poem was the Robert Frost Snowy Woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "No more. You have no more miles to go before you sleep. Sleep in heavenly peace." And essentially, I quoted the Emerson poem of how at least one child has breathed easier because you have lived, you have succeeded. So I read her my poem, and I wasn't sure if she heard me, but suddenly she started rolling her head back and forth and saying, "It was breathtaking. It was breathtaking. It was such a relief." And honestly, it was such a relief for me. I was so glad I did it and that she didn't get mad that I was saying, "Yep, you don't have much time left." But it was a beautiful relief.
Yeah.
And I guess my comment is, why do people wait until the moment of death to express their love and to really drop all defenses and get to the core of life, which is love.
Michael?
Sounds lovely.
It does. Hey, Mary Kay, great call. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Appreciate it.
Okay, can I have a quick question?
Yeah.
About the girl who was depressed and didn't want to look in the mirror.
Yeah.
How did that change her life?
Well, you know, the one in the mirror, if there's anything I've heard in my workshops, it's about loneliness. I think most of us, some of the time, and many people, much of the time, feel very lonely. And my strange way of looking at that is that if we're not gazing at the one in the mirror, in other words, if we're not sort of gazing at ourselves like we gazed at our child when the child was small, if we're not gazing at ourselves all our life, all through our life, that one in the mirror is very much alone. And just look in the mirror sometime and just gaze at that woman who's there and even smile at her, and she'll smile back.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Herself. Michael, I'm so sorry. Mary Kate, I'm so sorry. We got to go to a break. But
thanks
so much to both of you for that call. Thanks again.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay.
Thanks.
Zach, take it away.
Support for WAMC comes from Dr. John Carpenter, providing dental implants for the replacement of missing and loose teeth, 845-658-4055. Capcom Federal Credit Union, offering home mortgages, auto loans, checking, financial planning, and more, capcomfcu.org. And Adelphi University's Hudson Valley Center, Poughkeepsie, offering a graduate program in social work and graduate and undergraduate programs in nursing. adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley.
Well, everybody, we're back. All five phones are ringing off the hook, and it's a great tribute to our guest, N. Michael Murphy. Dr. N. Michael Murphy, co-founder of St. Peter's Hospice and founder of Love, Loss, and Forgiveness Project. And you've been listening to him. Makes a lot of sense. Let's go to Connie in Albany. Connie, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. Do you think, Doctor, that people who are dying wait for their loved ones to arrive to say goodbye or try to hold off death? And if so, how do they do that?
I wish I could answer that question. I hear that said a lot of the time. And I also hear said that by somebody that, you know, I wasn't there. I'd just gone out to get something to eat, and mother died while I was away. So does mother wait to die until her daughter has left? I don't know. I think the important thing is not whether you're physically there or not. It's whether, sort of at a soul level, at an emotional level, you've said what you had you needed to say. You've said thank you. You've said goodbye. You've said I love you. You give a blessing if that's what you want to do. And then whether you're there or not I'm not sure. I don't think it makes all that much difference. So, yes, I've heard this question over and over again. And yes, sometimes mother seems to wait for somebody to come. And sometimes she seems to die when the person has just left.
Hey, thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Connie.
Thank you.
Okay. That opens up one free phone. Let's go to John in Del Mar. John, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I, too, was trained by Dr. Murphy as a hospice volunteer, so I owe him a big vote of thanks. The training and the hospice experience just left me with so many wonderful memories and so forth. I was wondering if, I think you said that most people don't love themselves, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit. What are the signs?
Yes,
that you don't love yourself and what you should do. And
yes, it's a wonderful question. I like that question. I would hope somebody would ask. You know, loving yourself is not the sort of ego, narcissistic thing, saying, oh, what a wonderful person I am, and I'm the top of the heap, and I'm big, and I'm strong, and I'm tough, and all the rest of it. That's not what I'm talking about. Loving yourself is what you do to that child, that just giving this incredibly loving gaze and warmth. And that child thrives on that love. You don't have to say anything. If you said anything, the child wouldn't understand it anyway. So the child knows that he's loved. And I believe that child needs it when the child is very young.
But you mean the child being yourself?
Exactly. And that child needs, that adult needs it. He needs our loving attention all through his life. And so what I sort of imagine us doing is gazing at ourselves with love. And I actually, in my workshops, I encourage people to say something like, I've gazed at everybody else. I've looked after everybody else, and I've paid very little attention to you. And from now on, I'm going to pay attention to you, and when it comes time for you to die, I will hold you in my arms. What an incredibly reassuring thing that is for the one in the mirror. And the one in the mirror says at last, oh my God, I'm not alone. And I think our loneliness is that we pay no attention to ourselves. The narcissist is the one who seems to pay a hell of a lot of attention to himself, but that's very superficial.
That's a profound thought. John, thanks for asking the
question. Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Right, let's go. We're trying to get everybody in. It's not going to be easy because all the phones are ringing. Let's go to Elizabeth and Hunter. Elizabeth.
I don't have a question so much as I have a statement to make.
Fine.
About death and an area of life where there is, I think, profound neglect is to women who experience stillbirth. Or miscarriage, because the pregnancy was very, very real to them, and the person who is lost is not real to anyone else, and that person is not there. And if the woman has difficulty with self-love, as you've been discussing, she is enormously lonely and also very, very underserved, I have to say. I do know that at St. Peter's, I believe, and at Albany Medical Center, there is a perinatal bereavement group, or at least there was, but it's very uncommon, and this is a subject that no one will discuss.
Okay,
no one.
First, let's go back to Dr. Murphy, and then we have some people who've checked in on some of the social media, so go ahead.
Wonderful question. You know, in all my workshops, I ask people, did you ever have a miscarriage? You know, I do workshops in Romania, and I mean, this sounds absolutely amazing, and I was just floored by this. This one man said his wife had had 13 abortions, and it's huge.
But a miscarriage and abortion are two different things, right? Yes.
Miscarriage, yes.
Yes. Okay.
They are. But I think they're both important.
Yes, they are.
And what we do is to acknowledge publicly together that it happened. I often ask, did you have a name for the well, if you didn't have a name, what would you like to have called him or her? And then we light a candle and we just sit in silence as a recognition of this life and this death to the mother. It's terribly important. And it certainly needs acknowledgement.
And you've both made the point. Elizabeth, I wish we could give you more time, but we're trying to get it all done. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Okay, Patrick.
Yes. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Patrick Donges.
So we have checking in here on the Vox Pop page of WAMC.org, WAMC.org/VoxPop. That's new. We just had that URL revamped to make it a little bit easier for folks to get on there. Patience checks in and says, my mother had Alzheimer's and I did not have the chance to bond with her and say goodbye at the end. She simply wasn't there. I was grief-stricken that I lost my chance. And then the week after she died, I found 30 years of my letters to her that she had saved them, and they all ended with, I love you, Mom. I was flooded with relief. She did know I loved her. I would encourage everyone to let people know you love them right now and all your life long. You may not have the chance to say those words at the end.
Okay. Is there anything else on the page?
Nope.
No. Okay. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Alan.
Appreciate your keeping on top of this for us. Doctor, what do you think of that?
I think it's fine. And, you know, I encourage people, even if mother has Alzheimer's, is unconscious, to speak to her anyway.
Yeah.
Does she hear it? I have no idea. Yeah. But at least you have had the chance to speak it.
After my father died, I did.
Did you?
I can tell you that right now.
Oh,
I absolutely did.
Absolutely.
And it helped.
Of course it does.
And if you got a problem, who better to ask? Okay. Thank you so much for that. Let's go to Mike in Albany. Okay, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, Mike. Michael. You're on.
I was privileged to attend a workshop you gave some 13 years ago. I now find I need a little fine-tuning in my grief. How do I find out if you're having another workshop in the area?
Oh, we are having some more workshops in the area, and even having one in Ireland in May. So we've got a website. It's called Love, Loss, Forgiveness, all one word, loveloossforgiveness.org. Go there and you'll see the dates of the workshops. Or if you want to call somebody, a live body will be there. 518-232-1788. And okay. I hope to see you at a workshop.
Hey, Mike, thank you for the call. And gives us
thank
an opportunity
so
to get
much.
Everybody in on it. Thank you, Mike.
You're great, Dr. Murphy.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Abigail in Kingston. And we have some free phones now, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Abigail.
Well, thank you, Alan, for having this program.
Sure.
This is absolutely beautiful and amazing. And I, many, many years ago in the 70s, became familiar with Dr. Kubler-Ross.
Sure.
And volunteered, took a training in hospice. This was way, way back. And raised some $14,000 with a bunch of people by getting Odette to come to the Woodstock Playhouse. And it was just incredible. My father died at home, and he had a great sense of humor, looked just like Mel Brooks, and he said to me, which his mother had said to him in Yiddish, "You know, Ab, ever since they invented death, you can't be sure of your life." And so there's something I felt very lucky for, being able to let my father go. And to understand and to really grok the shortness, the brevity, and the importance of love, even though I make it angry and whatever. But Dr. Murphy, thank you so much. And Alan, thank you so much. And all we need is love, I guess.
That's
okay.
Thank you for that. And thank you for mentioning Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. You know, when I was in psychiatry, and I was getting very disillusioned with psychiatry when the drug companies took over, and I went to a workshop in Halifax, Nova Scotia with Elizabeth, and we became friends, and I even saw her many years later, just before she died. And she inspired me to start the hospice. A wonderful woman.
We did it in Kingston, New York.
Did you?
Yes, and yeah. As I say, I got Odetta to come and raise the funds for, this was before the government got involved or whatever.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Elizabeth, she didn't take very good loving care of herself. She gave us treasures, and she opened up death for us to talk about, and she did marvelous things, but she didn't look after herself very well.
Abigail, I'm trying to get everybody in.
Thank you very much.
And
thank you.
Abigail.
Bye.
Yeah. Let's go to Lewis in Woodstock. Lewis, you're on.
Yes, hello, Alan.
Hello,
how
Lewis. How are you? Long time.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to amplify everything that's been said. It's wonderful. And to specifically say that whether the person has passed on, whether you were in the room or not, they're still there. They're still within shouting distance, shall we say. The other side is not that far away. And for one to take their time, light a candle, as you say some prayers, heartfelt prayers, after the person has passed, It's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. Now, my grandfather, who passed over...
Louis, could you speak a little louder? You're breaking up.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Well, it's not that great a phone, yeah.
Okay. I'll just simply say, when my grandfather passed over, I was in the room with him, and I was very fortunate to have the experience that in the middle of the room after he passed, there was a dazzling light that expanded to about the size of a medicine ball, if you know what that is.
Sure.
And then right at the center of it, it opened up, and you literally could see into it and feel this incredible golden energy, divine light, as it were, holy light, as it were, pouring from that opening.
Okay, Louis, only because of your phone being so lousy, I'm sure your words are terrific, but if you can't understand them on the other end, it doesn't help. But I thank you, and I think I get the gist of what you're saying. Always great to hear from you. Thank you, Louis.
Amen.
Yeah. Let's go to, I don't know, is that a 5 or a 3 or what? Oh, yeah, it's a 3. Okay, Marianne in Newburgh. Marianne, you're on.
Hi. Do you know whether when a person is on morphine for about 5 days, whether or not they can still hear what you're saying because they're in the last stages and my father died in that condition? I talked to him as much as I could, but there wasn't any response. There was no movement. I couldn't tell whether I was
Marianne. I don't mean to rush you. Let's get an answer from the doctor.
Yes. The answer is yes. The morphine... Morphine reduces pain. It doesn't reduce consciousness too much. And I'm sure he heard you. And yes, talking is wonderful, but simply being there, it's like, as I mentioned earlier, when we gaze at our child, we don't have to say anything. The child picks up the love. When we're with somebody who is dying, just our loving energy gets through, I have no doubt. So, yes, it's nice to share some words, and yes, it's nice if the dying person can share some words back. But if that doesn't happen, that doesn't mean that you're not making a very important connection.
Marianne, thank you. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
For the call.
Thank
and
you.
Let's go to Sarah in Glens Falls. Sarah, you're on.
Hello, I'm 32 years old, and I lost my dad at 53. And it was about a year ago, and I'm really struggling, and I was kind of curious if When you lose your parents so young, if that makes it harder to be able to move on and be happy for them.
It's hard to lose a parent at any age, and of course, 50 something is extremely young, but it's hard, and there are things often that we wanted to say to him that we didn't get to say, and we'd love to have heard from him, especially a young parent. Yes, and during my years in the hospice, I saw many young people, young parents die in their 30s and so on. Very difficult. It's hard. It's very difficult. If it's still troubling you, give us a call at that number, and we'd be glad for you to come
go
to
ahead.
A workshop where you can talk about.
Michael, give the number one more time.
518-232-1788.
Okay, Sarah, thanks for the call. I'm sorry, we're sort of out of time now, and we have a lot of people left on the line. We have Deborah from Saratoga Springs, Alzheimer's patient that reacted to poems by Poe. And Diana from Rhinebeck, are Americans' attitudes towards death changing? You want to take a second on this, because we're about out of time.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We are talking about death more, and I think that's a wonderful thing. I think we should be talking about love more too, and loving ourselves more, because it's a very loveless society at this present time.
Well, you've certainly made your points today. You've done a wonderful job of it. We are just about out of time. Thanks to everybody who called. Also, a very special thank you to our special guest, Dr. N. Michael Murphy, for joining us today. Underwriting support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. Health-quest.org for locations. Thanks again for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thank you to Sally Maris for answering the phones today. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Chartok, and I hope that you can stay tuned now for just a little bit of relaxing theme and then some news.